we've been around for doing this work for a number of years. I've actually worked on, I'm a clinical social worker on LGBT health and mental health for almost 40 years, 40 years this summer, and this project grew out of that work, out of my realization that even though for several decades now, adolescents have been coming out as lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and more recently transgender at much younger ages than prior generations of adults, that there were no services to support them in the context of their families. So because I knew that families are a very important source of support, and all the research shows that they're protective against major health risks in general, we didn't have any comparable information about how families contributed to risk and well-being for LGBT adolescents. So that's why we started this project, and we've really been doing this work for close to 14 years now. The exciting thing about this work is that we have been implementing our family support approach in Utah for many years. In fact, I've been doing education and training on LGBT health and mental health for adolescents and young adults for the past 25 years. So I'm very familiar with Utah. I've had the opportunity to work with many community groups and providers and with church officials and religious leaders. And it's a very important environment, particularly because the culture is so family-focused for our work. And then, of course, I've worked with on-the-ground community-based organizations, including working with Marion Edmonds Allen for the last 2 years on specifically implementing our work with the program that they have on the ground in northern Utah. So I think listeners will find that our work may be familiar to some of them. They may have seen our family education materials or heard community folks talking about our work. This program that we're implementing now is being put in place because the numbers of young people who are in distress has been increasing for quite a while. It's not something new. It's been happening over time. And because I've worked on LGBT health and mental health for almost 40 years, I've seen young people coming out at much younger ages, starting about 20 years ago, compared with LGBT adults who came out in prior generations. There's a lot of reasons for that. The primary reason is access to information. The internet, anybody would agree, has changed all of our lives. It's brought information into our living rooms, into our personal devices, into our pockets. To provide access to information about LGBT lives that just wasn't present or available for earlier generations. So young people know who they are through the media, through the news, through popular culture, through everyday conversation in ways that just didn't occur before. And as a result of that, they've been coming out at much younger ages. And so, for example, in our study of LGBT adolescents and families, we found that on average, adolescents were self-identifying as lesbian, gay, or bisexual a little bit over age 13 on average. And on average, their families were finding out a little bit later than that. And we've also seen young people increasingly coming out at even younger ages, younger than age 12. And part of the reason for this is that while many people have misinformation and disinformation about sexual orientation and think it's only about sexuality, it's really about connectedness and the deep need that all human beings have for relatedness with others. So young people can know who they are at earlier ages than puberty, and that's been documented in research certainly before ours and while we were doing our own research and since then, so that's not something new, but it may be new to many people who think that it's only about sexuality. It's really about connectedness. And part of the challenge has been that even though young people have been coming out at younger ages, there have not been family-based support services. Our study was the first comprehensive study to look at what happens in families, how they adapt, respond, and adjust when young people come out or found out or are forced out of the closet during adolescence. So we did an extensive, in-depth, interview-based study all over California, and that means in the rural areas and coastal villages and suburban urban centers up to the top of the state and down to the bottom. And as you know, there's very culturally, ethnically, religiously diverse population here, including quite conservative parts of California. And what we did was to document how did families, in fact, parents, caregivers, foster parents, guardians, and the caregivers might have been grandparents or older siblings or aunts and uncles who were caring for those children, how did they respond to that adolescent's LGBT identity, and what did they say, do, how did they act? And that included behaviors like trying to change that adolescent's sexual orientation or gender identity, preventing them from learning about who they were, denying who they were, versus finding a positive role model to give them a sense of the future, talking with them and telling them they loved them even if they were uncomfortable, and helping their congregations, their religious congregations, become more supportive and responsive and welcoming, to provide a welcoming environment for them to worship together as a family. So we then measured all of those more than 100 accepting and rejecting behaviors in a follow-up study of LGBT young adults. And we were then able to show the very powerful relationship between those accepting and rejecting behaviors during adolescence and what happened to that young adult in terms of substance abuse, suicide attempts, depression, self-esteem, wellness, sense of the future as a young adult. And the findings are very powerful. We've been, as I said, doing this work now for about 13 years. And for some time, we've been developing with families to guide us and young LGBT young people and providers who serve them, educating us about how to talk about our research findings, how to present them, how to share them, not only with culturally diverse families and families who speak languages other than English, but also religiously diverse families. And we've started developing a series of faith-based family education booklets, and the first version we developed was for Mormon families, which I co-wrote with a Mormon bishop, Bishop Bob Reese, and that booklet has been disseminated and downloaded by thousands of Mormon families and communities across the U.S. And in some other countries as well. Well, we didn't focus exclusively in Utah. We've been doing our work in, we train across the U.S. We train in other countries as well on our family support approach. We have not gone into a single community and deployed our family support approach, our educational information, our resources in one single community to help educate and inform the entire community. And that's what's different. That's what we're actually going to bring to Utah, which is a focus on education, information, and guidance based on our peer-reviewed research to help families around the state, schools, congregations, and other community institutions to really understand the critical role of families and how our research actually shows ways that parents and caregivers can support their LGBT children even if they disagree with their being gay or transgender. Underneath whatever disappointment and anger and confusion those parents may have, they still have a connection to that child. And so what we're helping them understand is that behaviors they thought that could help their child, such as trying to change their sexual orientation or gender identity, or excluding them from family events and activities because of who they are, or even throwing them out of their home, that those behaviors are related to highly negative health problems in young adulthood, including very high levels of suicide. For example, parents and caregivers are shocked to find that when they engage in lots of these rejecting behaviors, those young people are more than 8 times as likely to try to take their own lives. And some of the behaviors are even related to a 9 times greater likelihood of attempted suicide. And that's shocking for parents and families to think that I love my child, I'm trying to help them fit in, have a good life, be accepted by others, be accepted in our congregation, and that these behaviors are actually really very harmful for our child. And because we've also worked with families who threw their child out of the home, or that adolescent ran away or was removed from the home and placed in foster care, we found that many of those families said later, if I only knew what to do, I would have done something different. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know that when I threw my child out, my daughter out or my son out, I wouldn't see them again and that it would tear our family apart. It wasn't just my son or daughter, we've suffered as well. So we've learned a great deal over these years, because not only did we do the research and develop family education materials and guidance materials, we've actually been developing ways to work with families to increase support, to help them understand how to help their children in the context of their family, their culture, and their values. And this is a very different approach, because historically, not only do families have a lot of misinformation about these issues, they haven't really known where to go to get accurate information or how to help their children and their family. And that's what we're doing, is to bring this in a much more substantive way across the state, and obviously to work with all of the social institutions that are present in Utah. And because it is a culture that values family and really understands the power of family to provide support and to build healthy futures, our research is a perfect fit culturally with Utah. What's different about our work is that we value families. We value their culture. We value the deeply held beliefs. And our approach is not to change those deeply held beliefs. Our approach is to bring accurate information, support, and help to help them understand that there is a way to support that LGBT child, even if they believe that being gay or transgender is wrong. Many people don't believe that there is such a thing as a gay or transgender person, but if you go to all of the major research, if you go to the National Institutes of Health and the National Academy of Sciences, which recently sponsored a major study of the health disparities among LGBT people, and I was actually on that scientific committee, all of these deep, respected scientific institutions are now looking at the profound health disparities of LGBT people across the life course, including adolescence. And I link this with a special needs child. If a parent realizes that they have a child with special needs, they need information to help that child, to strengthen their family, to provide support, to promote their child's well-being, they go to the most well-informed scientific and educational sources. And we're actually bringing the latest cutting-edge research on these issues in a way that's culturally congruent. I've been meeting with religious leaders in the church for a number of years, presenting our research to them. I think they've been very interested in it, showing them our materials before we disseminated them. And we really hope to work even more closely with the church in bringing out this program in Utah and with other religious institutions there as well. There's a dominant culture and a religion, you know, which many of the residents belong to, but there are other religions there as well. And our work is very respectful of faith traditions, and I think that's another difference about it, and it's why we get so many requests across the country. We've gotten requests from other countries as well to not only bring our work there, but stay there and help them disseminate our family support approach across those countries. I actually believe that it's really important for us to do this first in the U.S. Before we spend much more time exporting it elsewhere, because I think that we can show, as we've done in the communities where we've already worked, we've been able to show a difference. We've been able to show that when we present information and research-based guidance in a way that is culturally relevant for families and respects who they are, they can understand how to help their children. And I think our findings are very powerful and very compelling, that there are behaviors that are highly linked with really negative outcomes and others that are related to health, well-being, and a positive connection to one's family. And I think if you look at a culture that values the family, of course they're going to want to have happy, healthy children and a well-connected family and in a faith that believes that families are eternal, of course, that becomes even more important. It's really critical that families have accurate information to make appropriate decisions about how to help their children, how to keep their family together, and how to provide appropriate guidance for their children. And all of those young people who've been thrown out of their homes or removed from their homes because of, you know, deep conflict in the family and family rejection of that LGBT young person, those young people are at far greater risk having been removed from, you know, the support of their families. Even if they're in a family that's rejecting, they're still better off than if they're living on the street somewhere or being exploited or being abused and victimized or living in a alternative situation of some kind that isn't their family. Because when I started my work many years ago, before I started this project, I did the first study of what happens in faith-based homeless programs for LGBT young people. How are they treated? How are they served? What are their experiences? And I looked at a whole wide range of them, and I did interviews with LGBT homeless youth who were living on the streets, and that included interviews with Mormon LDS LGBT young people. And I saw a profound difference between the Mormon LGBT adolescents and others. There seemed to be a greater sense of despair and despondency and hopelessness. And as I began to understand more and more about the eternities and what that would mean for them, I realized that what I was seeing were young people who believed that they would be alone for eternity. And what could be more despairing than that? And I also worked in the early AIDS epidemic in the South, where I saw many young people leaving their families because they didn't want to shame them and they didn't want to embarrass or humiliate their parents and family members. And they'd go to the big city and maybe later on they would get AIDS and they would be in extremis. And I helped many of their parents come to be at their child's deathbed. And I saw the terrible loss of not only the family life, but the opportunity to share and be part of each other's lives, which is so important for all of our families. And so those two experiences, I think, were very formative in helping me start the Family Acceptance Project, as I said, now 14 years ago. And I really started planning this project in the late 1990s. And I knew that based on my work as a clinician and a practitioner, that we could do things differently. And when I started the Family Acceptance Project, it was never just a research project. I'm a social worker. My colleague, Rafael Diaz, that I started the project with is a social worker. And our aim was to develop a whole new family intervention model, a whole new way that we could bring the families into the room and into the lives of their LGBT young people and have them be part of that at a much earlier part of their lives, not only to prevent negative outcomes, but also to promote their well-being and to strengthen those families. So my aim was not just research. It was really impacting health and well-being in a very different way, but doing it with the family as the basic unit of intervention and education. We have now four different versions of our family education booklet. We have a generic version that's in English, Spanish, and Chinese, and then the faith-based Mormon version, and we're working on other faith-based versions and language versions of that booklet. But we ask people in a simple way to tell us how motivated they are to help families support their LGBT children as a result of reading the booklet. And I can say that 87 to 88% of readers say that they're highly motivated as a result of reading the booklet and what they've learned in it. So bringing accurate information to people in a way that resonates for them, that's culturally relevant, is one of the most important things that can be done. And one of the things we're working on now, and it's challenging, as you can imagine, we're working on lower literacy versions of those booklets to bring them to people who speak another language or maybe who don't have, you know, the level of education of a reader, perhaps, who's graduated from high school. So bringing this life-saving and life-sustaining information to families so they can help their children, their families, and themselves is the most important work I think that we can do right now. And I believe it will have a big impact on helping keep families together, on not only decreasing the high rates of homelessness of LGBT young people, but also suicide and substance abuse and so many of the other negative outcomes that have been documented in peer-reviewed research for a long time with LGBT people, not because of who they are, but because of how other people treat them and the stigma they experience being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. When I first started presenting on our research in Utah, which would have been when our first major study was published in Pediatrics in the beginning of 2009, and I did a presentation for the public in a big public library, and parents were in the audience of a 10-year-old who, active Mormon parents, loved their son, their oldest son. They suspected that he was gay, and they got a copy of our booklet, which we had there for them to take, for everybody to take. They didn't have to ask questions. They didn't have to identify themselves. They followed the guidance and the information in our booklet on how do you help support your child and how do you help protect them and promote their well-being. And 3 years later, I had the opportunity to meet them in a private home, and they told me that they found our booklet. They said it saved their son's life. They said it made a profound difference in how they interacted with that young person. They felt also that they couldn't be public outside their home, but their home was a safe zone, and for them that made a big difference. What we want to do is to make the state a safe zone. The dominant religion, the Mormon religion in Utah, is a religion of compassion. I believe that Utah is a compassionate and caring environment, and part of what we need to do is to provide accurate information so that these very distressing needs of LGBT young people, of exceedingly high rates of attempted suicide, extraordinary high rates of homelessness, that we can address this as a humanitarian crisis, which it, in fact, is what it is, and do it with accurate information and compassion. And I think that by doing that and, of course, evaluating our work, we'll be able to show other communities that the increasing high levels of risk for young people, LGBT young people, that there are things that we can do to prevent that, and we can do them now. We don't have to wait for them to get worse, because they will get worse if we don't respond, because right now there are very, very few places anywhere in the U.S. or anywhere else for that matter where families can go to get accurate information about how to help young people who come out at these very young ages as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender.